We're doing Swamiji for quite some time. There's an institute for the study of Vedanta and Sanskrit in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania called Arsha Vidya Gurukulam. It's a residential facility for the study of Arsha Vidya, which is the traditional knowledge of the scriptures of India. And they teach yoga, Sanskrit, Vedanta, and related disciplines. So if you're not familiar with the Indian tradition, you may be asking, you know, what's this Swami business, right? Is the Swami someone who just likes to wear bright orange clothes and have such polysyllabic names that you have to take a breath before you can finish his name? There's a beautiful verse that goes, Loke stin buddha nishta pura prukta mayanaka jnana yogena samkhyanam karma yogena yoginam. And it basically talks about the two approaches to a spiritual life. One, on one hand, is fully engaged. One is fully engaged in the world, has relationships, has a family, contributes to the GDP. Yeah. And what's unique about this path is that this committed lifestyle is that one sees every opportunity, one sees every experience in one's life as an opportunity for awakening, for quieting the mind, for opening the heart and becoming alive to what is. So everything is grace, prasada buddhi. And at the same time, everything is an offering. Someone who is a karma yogi who has this engagement in the world approaches all situations and tries to address every situation with as much compassion and as much vairagya, as much understanding about the objectivity regarding things as possible. And the other path into which one grows from this first approach is called sannyasa. And that's a path of renunciation. It's for one who has seen the glitter and the shiny things for what they are in the world and has prioritized his activities and his attention, his or her activities or attentions, to what is actually the most important in the world. And that's what a swami is. A swami takes a vow of abhayam and ahimsa. Ahimsa means causing no harm, living very gently in the world. And abhayata, bhayam means fear. Abhaya means fearless. Abhayata means fearlessness. So a swami, a Hindu monk, a sannyasi, is one who lives fearlessly because it takes a second thing to become fearful of. And in a sannyasi's vision, there is no second thing. When he sees you, he sees himself, and there's nothing to be fearful of. And at the same time, he lives a life so he's not a competitor. He's not, no one should take him as trying to elbow his way in to share these scarce resources that we all seem to be clamoring for. So the name Swami, Vididatmananda Saraswati, it's a mouthful, right? Mm-hmm. So what's a swami? A swami is one who has this vision. A swami is one who's yukta, who is, in a sense, self-possessed, whose cravings and desires have been reduced to mere preferences. Saraswati, Swami Vididatmananda Saraswati. Saraswati is actually the name of the goddess of knowledge. And it's a name given in the Dashanami order to people who have been initiated into this renunciate tradition. And it's in a sense asking for the blessing of the goddess of knowledge to come and manifest through that particular individual. And so lastly, Vidita Atma Ananda. Can be taken a couple ways, but simply, Vidita means known, well ascertained. Atma means oneself. Vididatma is one whose self is very well understood, very well known. And why is that important? Why is that meaningful? Because of the ananda. Ananda is that which we're all seeking in all of our attempts, all of our activities, and all of our approaches to life. Everything we seek, we're seeking that completeness, that fullness, that sense of lack of limitation that we constantly experience. So a swami is one who finds that completeness, that fullness, that sense of at-homeness in the self, which is very clearly well known. And that Swami has the capacity to communicate that through the Sampradaya, through the teaching tradition to the student. And this teaching goes down from teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student. So we're in the presence of a great teacher. I had the privilege of listening to him a number of times, attending a number of camps. And I think we're all very blessed to have him here. So please turn your cell phones off and give your full attention to Swamiji. At the end, please stay around for a couple quick announcements about upcoming programs. Thank you.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. The topic of discussion this evening is freedom from sadness. Sadness is a typical human problem. There are living beings other than human beings. This sadness, depression, these are the problems that a human being suffers from. You never see a street dog depressed, sitting in a corner with long face. A dog or a cat or a cow or a buffalo or a bird, you don't see sadness, depression in them. Whereas the sadness or depression is a typical human problem. And unfortunately, every human being is suffering from sadness in one degree or the other. So what is unique about human being? What is it that distinguishes a human being from other living beings that makes him susceptible to the sadness? It is what we call self-consciousness. A human being, that is you and I, are conscious of ourselves as well as the conscious of the world. You might say that even Swami, even a dog also is conscious. It is true. A dog also is conscious of itself. And perhaps seems to know itself as a dog because it reacts one way when other dogs are there. And reacts differently when cats are there. So I guess some kind of self-consciousness is there. A human being is so sensitive that not only there is self-consciousness, there is self-judgment. I am conscious of myself. At the same time, I have an opinion about myself as to who I am, how I am. It is the nature of our intellect. We have been blessed with an intellect with which we learn, we decide, we analyze, we conclude. It is the nature of the intellect to judge. And therefore, intellect judges whatever it is it comes in contact with. For example, I'm sitting in front of you. Your intellect is bound to have some or the other judgment of the Swami who is sitting here. seems to be all right. Looks strange. You see, he knows what he's talking about. Something everybody may have their own opinion, which may change, of course. But whatever it is that we confront, we immediately have a judgment or an opinion about whatever it is that we confront. That is the nature of our mind or nature of our intellect. And the first thing that I am aware of, or first thing that I am conscious of, is myself. I am always conscious of myself. I am conscious of the world also, but it is possible that I may not be conscious of the world around me, but I am conscious of myself anyway. And since I am conscious of myself, I have an opinion or judgment about myself. Thus, every human being has an opinion or judgment about his or her own self. What is the nature of his opinion? What kind of opinion do I have of myself? Generally, the opinion is that I am a limited being. I am a lacking or a wanting being. This is what I find myself to be. And whenever I become aware of my lack or want or limitation or inadequacy, whenever in my opinion I find myself to be an inadequate person. Inadequate means not being able to live up to my own expectation of myself. Then I become unhappy with myself. I have lots of expectations of myself. I want to see myself a successful person. See myself as always right, always successful, always under control. This is what my expectation is of myself. Sometimes I am right, sometimes I am successful, sometimes I am in control. Meaning that there are times when I find that I am acceptable in my own judgment, in my own perception, whenever I am able to live up to my own expectation of myself, I find myself satisfied with myself, happy with myself. Then I am happy. However, whenever I find that I am not up to my own expectation, in a test, I may have an expectation that I should score SAT, say 2200 points, and I got 1900 points. I feel I'm not all right, I'm no good. I expected 1900 and got 2100. I'm very happy with myself. I think that I'm something, I'm successful, I'm good, I'm adequate, I'm capable. Thus, almost constantly, a commentary is going on in my own mind about what I am. I am all right, I am not all right. In my own perception, in my own judgment, you may declare me to be all right. Our Dakshaji may give a wonderful description of the Swami. That is his perception. But whether in my perception I am a learned person, I am this so and so, I have my own perception which may or may not necessarily agree with his or somebody else's perception. Meaning that it is quite possible that the world may declare me to be a great person, but I may not declare myself to be great. And what is important is what I declare myself to be. Of course, I'm constantly striving to get an approval from the world. I'm striving to live up to the expectations that the world has of myself. I'm striving to live up to those expectations. I want to be acceptable to the world. I want to be approved by the world. Why is that so? So that if the world finds that I'm acceptable, I think that I must be acceptable, I must be all right. Meaning that very often I look at myself through the standpoint of the world. The world says that I'm a great person, I think that I should be a great person. Because I do not think very highly of myself. A human being generally has a low self-esteem, does not think very highly of himself or self. Our Swami says, tells a joke that here is Miss Universe. This woman is declared Miss Universe. It means that she is the most beautiful woman in the universe. That's what it means. So now the world has declared. So now she should be assured that she is the most beautiful woman, right? So there should not be any need now for her to make up her face from tomorrow because she is already most beautiful. But no, if she was spending 1 hour every day for makeup, after being declared Miss Universe, she may perhaps spend 2 hours. She is not sure. They think that I am beautiful. I do not know. Thus, what is most important for me is what is my opinion about myself. This is not understood sometimes. And the reason why very often I give importance to the opinion of others is because when others have a good opinion about me, then I think that I must be good. Thus, a constant need on my part to feel good about myself, a constant need. A constant need on my part to accept myself, to be acceptable to myself, to be satisfied with myself, to be acceptable in my own judgment. I usually have a very harsh judgment about myself. It is not easy for me to really become successful in my own judgment. So this is the root of the problem called sadness for human being. Self-consciousness and self-judgment. Also, a general habit of not judging oneself in a very kind manner, usually judging oneself as inadequate or not being able to live up to my own expectation, and therefore generally I am sad. Sadness arises from self-non-acceptance, self-dissatisfaction. And this self-non-acceptance or self-dissatisfaction arises whenever I find that I am not adequate, when I am not able to live up to my own expectation of myself. So, what I am trying is constantly seeking to become acceptable to my own self. There are moments when I do find myself acceptable, then I'm happy. There are times when I find myself not acceptable to myself, not being able to measure up to my own expectation, then I become unhappy. So this is very important thing to understand. Happiness and unhappiness has nothing to do with anything other than myself, outside of myself. It has to do only with myself. I'm happy when I am satisfied with myself. I accept myself. I think that I'm all right in my perception. And I'm unhappy whenever I find myself not acceptable to me in my own perception. What happens with this expectation is that as I keep on meeting my expectation of myself, unfortunately, my expectation of myself keep rising. That's a problem. At one point I may have been satisfied if I score rank in first five in my class. I was happy. But as I did that, then slowly my own expectation, I should be in the first three, first two, I must be number one. Then not only in my class, in the whole school, not only in the whole school, in the whole district, not in the whole district, thus I keep on raising my expectation of myself. And therefore, this possibility of my not accepting myself, of my not being able to live up to my own expectation, keeps rising, not falling. And therefore, this problem of self-non-acceptance or self-satisfaction generally remains. In that sense, a human being is usually a sad creature. That's the reason why we very often or generally avoid ourselves. I avoid being with myself. I keep myself engaged in one or the other activity so that I do not have to confront myself. Many of our activities are nothing but the escape distractions, escaping from my own self. Therefore, I work very hard for a vacation, and what do I do in vacation? I'm tired, I need rest, but do I take rest? Maybe for a few hours, and then I find out some activity for myself. Even in the evening, I come home tired from work, and I may have a few minutes of quietude with myself. I come home, sit in my favorite chair, have a cup of coffee, enjoy it for a few minutes, and then I pull out a newspaper, switch on TV, my cell phone, do something or the other. Meaning that I engage myself in an activity to escape from myself. There's nothing wrong in activity, nothing wrong in doing something. What is that that actually compels me to, I'm compelled to do something? Doing something is one thing, and being compelled to do is another thing. I'm compelled because I'm not comfortable with my own self. And therefore, I take a vacation in which I work so hard that I need another vacation after coming back. So this is the life of a human being. Whether I am a lowly worker digging ditches, or I may be working a white collar worker, you know, in some corporation, or a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, an executive, a wealthy person, whoever I am. This business of self-judgment and putting oneself down does not leave anybody. And therefore, happiness is self-acceptance, unhappiness is self-non-acceptance. And unfortunately, that's the reason why I pursue one endeavor after the other, is to hopefully become that by which or so that I'll become acceptable to myself. So right now I think that if I become so and so, I will be acceptable to myself. If I do such and such thing, I'll be acceptable to myself. Thus, behind every pursuit, there is this one agenda or one desire. Either you call it desire to be happy or desire to be acceptable to myself. So this is, what is sadness? Sadness is the result or reaction of self-non-acceptance. Sometimes it builds up into self-rejection. So that builds up into self-condemnation. And when there is a build-up, sadness does not arise merely by one thought, it's a reason of build-up of a thought. When same kind of negative thought keeps again coming again and again and again, there's a build-up, I become sad. And if that thought continues to build up, I become depressed. So all sadness, all depression is the result of self-non-acceptance, self-rejection, self-condemnation. Therefore, the problem of sadness, the solution does not lie outside of myself. Sadness is not a problem centered on something outside of myself, it is centered on me. It is a spiritual problem, not some kind of a psychological problem. Spirituality is a little psychology, but basically a spiritual problem. But generally we think that somebody else is responsible for my sadness. Once a Swami was saying, there are people were there in front of him, he asked, "Hey, this morning you don't look happy, you look sad, what's the reason?" "Swamiji, I have not received a letter from my parents since last 3 months. I'm sad." Ask the other person, "Hey, you look sad. What's the reason?" "Swamiji, I received a letter today." "Hey, you look sad. What's the reason?" "Swamiji, I'm not married." "How about you?" "Swamiji, I'm married." "Why you said?" "Swamiji, I don't have children." "Why do you say?" "Because I have children." The point is, our conclusion is that it is someone else or something else that is the cause of my sadness. And that's the reason why I keep on rearranging things around myself. So if I think that my furniture is not all that I see, I rearrange that, I rearrange my house, I rearrange my job, I rearrange my marriage, I rearrange everything, hoping that I will be able to discover or create an arrangement which will make me happy. But the sadness does not arise from something else. Sadness is centered upon myself, upon the self. There are two kinds of problems in our life. One is a set of problems centered upon non-self, things other than myself. And there are problems centered upon self. Two kinds of problems are there. For example, hunger is a problem centered upon the body, not upon the self. So we have to recognize the kind of problem and then seek an appropriate solution. Meaning that if I'm hungry, I should know that that's a problem centered upon stomach. Meditation will not solve that problem. Doing something with myself will not solve that problem. Hunger, thirst, poverty, all of these are problems, you know, illiteracy. All these problems are centered upon non-self and therefore they require appropriate solutions. Meaning that, "Swami, what solution Vedanta has for hunger?" I said, "Vedanta has a problem, solution for all problems centered upon the self." The two kinds of knowledge, as we can quote, Dvividya Veda Parachaiva Parachaiva. There is one lower knowledge and there is one upper knowledge. There is an inferior and lower knowledge, a higher knowledge. Knowledge of physical sciences is one knowledge, knowledge of the world is one knowledge, knowledge of self is the other knowledge. So we require both of them, because we do need to have problems at the physical level, at the level of body, etc., at level of environment. So we do need that knowledge to solve those problems. But the problem of sadness cannot be solved by something outside of myself. I remember my own self many years ago, working in a place in New York City. I remember it was 4:30 in the evening. I found myself going down from my office to where there was those vending machines, put a coin and get a candy. I was feeling bored. I was feeling not good. So what do? Get a candy. Watch a show. Go to a movie. This is what we do. So when we don't feel so good, when we feel bored, when we feel sad, then we adopt this kind of solutions. But they are all solutions centered upon outside of myself, whereas sadness is not the problem, it's a problem centered upon. But Swamiji, when I watch movie, I do feel good. And I said, it's an escape. That time, I'm able to somehow avoid confronting myself because my mind is distracted and therefore I don't have to deal with myself. As soon as movie is over, again I come back to where I was. Or sometimes movie itself can trigger something yet, and again I may come back to myself. The point is that sadness is a problem faced by every human being. It is a problem centered upon the self, and therefore it should have a solution also centered upon the self and not centered upon non-self. Meaning that by rearranging the world, which you may do, I mean nothing wrong in it, if it is too hot, you can turn on the air conditioner, make it comfortable. It's too cold, use the heater, make it comfortable. Nothing wrong in creating comfort, that's quite okay. But if I think that by air conditioner I'll become free from sadness, that we cannot expect. For that, a different solution is required. So freedom from sadness is what Vedanta teaches, Bhagavad Gita teaches. What is the solution? If self non-acceptance is a problem, self-acceptance is a solution. By my not accepting myself as I am, I'm unhappy, accept yourself as you are, that's it. Look, Swami, I accept myself. Did it solve the problem? But unfortunately, just by declaring I accept myself, acceptance doesn't happen. Acceptance has to happen. It cannot be willed. Certain things can be willed, certain things have to happen. Like love, I can't will. I love you, okay? Now that doesn't, it has to happen. Love has to happen. Otherwise it would be so nice, so easy. There is no problem, no conflict at all. If the spouses are living with each other, if they can, love is a solution to all problems of relationship. And opposite is a problem for all relationship. So if love can be willed, then I can always say I love you. And then if love happens, that would be wonderful. Doesn't happen. Meaning that this love, happiness, acceptance has to happen. And what can we do about that? We can create conditions conducive for that to happen. Sleep has to happen. I can't will sleep. I mean, even if I will, I don't fall asleep. What I can do is to create conditions for sleep. A comfortable bed, and a comforter, and temperature, and fan, whatever I You know, I create conditions. My pillow is the right height, comfort is of the right kind, fan is the right speed. My room is essentially dark with one small night lamp. That's what I can do. Sleep has to happen. Similar love also, I can bring a gift, I can do things. Which situation can be conducive for love to happen? Similarly, self-acceptance has to happen. And I must create conditions for that to happen. What do I do? I do things such that I'm inclined to accept myself. I invoke from myself an acceptable self. And we'll talk about one or two things that we can do. One is that Lord Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita that you will be able to accept yourself when you can accept what is around you. So Lord Krishna teaches what he calls graceful acceptance of what is. There are certain realities of life. Very often we do not accept those realities. We resist the realities. We reject the realities very often. So there are realities of life. What's a reality? For example, when there is birth, there is going to be death. It's a reality. When there is day, there will be night. It's a reality. Like there are two sides of a coin. Similarly, life also is made of this opposing pairs. Heat and cold, pleasure and pain, birth and death, success and failure. This is what life is made of. Unfortunately, what I do is, I accept the life partially. Success I accept. Failure I don't accept. Comfort I accept. Discomfort I don't accept. Honor I accept. Dishonor I don't accept. But honor and dishonor, success and failure, gain and loss. So these are the realities of life. What is the reality? Something that I not created, something that I confront. I've not created birth, I've not created death, it is there. I've not created success, I've not created failure, it is there. I've not created honor, I've not created dishonor, because you decide whether I'm honored or not honored. The world decides whether to honor me or dishonor me. So there are so many such things which are not in my control, which happen to me, which I have not created, which I do not control. Thus in life there are many, many things that we do not control. What should be our attitude towards the things that we do not control? This famous serenity prayer tells us that attitude. I will change a few words and say, God, give me the maturity to accept gracefully what I do not control. Give me the maturity and courage to change what I can control. Thus in our life, in every situation, there are two things. Things which I can control, things that I cannot control. Right now, I can control what I have to say. So what I talk is under my control, generally speaking. Even that also sometimes is not in my control. Lot of time we talk about, we say things which then later on we regret, means that it was not in my control. But let's say that when I'm giving you a talk, usually what I'm saying is in my control. But whether you listen to me or not, even after listening to me, whether you will accept it or not, after accepting, whether you will understand it or not, after understanding, whether you accept it or not, after accepting, whether you will adopt it or not, all of these I can't control. The purpose of my communicating with you is that you listen to me, that you understand what I am saying in the way I am seeking to convey. Everybody understands, all right, but whether they understand what I mean or they understand something else, so I wish that you understand what I am saying in the same way, meaning which I intend to convey. After understanding what I say, I also expect or hope that you will find it reasonable, find it acceptable, find it right. After finding that, I further expect that you will put it into practice. But that is when all this talk or discourses would have served the purpose if it can bring about some change or transformation in the listener. Otherwise, if I remain intact, which very often we do, after listening to things for years together, people sometimes remain intact. No change at all. In that case, all the listening has not helped. So we hope to change, transform, benefit from this. Now whether all that will happen, I can't control. Thus in every situation there are things that I can control and things that I cannot control. What can I control? What I do is what I can control. And what will be the outcome of what I do is not in my control. What I say is in my control. The outcome, whether you understand or not, whether you accept or not, is not something in my control. Therefore, since it is my habit to judge myself always, if I have to judge, I should judge on the... How should I judge myself? I should at the most judge myself based on what is in my control and not judge myself based on what is not in my control. Meaning that, should I consider myself successful? What is my criterion right now, for example, for declaring me successful in my own mind? One is, if I said what should have been said by me and very satisfactory, meaning my action, which is my control, if that is done properly, that's one way of judging that I did well. I'm all right. Second way of judging is whether people understood or not, people accepted it or not, people, do they respect me or not, do they congratulate me or not. That is what is called outcome, which is what I do not control. And Lord Krishna says, do not judge yourself based on the outcome which you do not control, judge yourself based on the action or the effort which you control. Unfortunately, we keep on judging ourselves based on outcome. Whenever we perform an action, it can be anything. Playing tennis, basketball, maybe an ad sport, maybe a test, maybe my work, in my place of work, I'm an engineer, a doctor, a professional, a farmer, whatever I am. Generally, we judge ourselves based on the result or the outcome of what we do. And it is quite likely that since outcome or the result I do not control, therefore it is quite likely that the outcome may not be in keeping with my expectation. Today, I judge myself based on the result or outcome of my effort. Therefore, when I appear for a test, I already have a target for myself. I should score such and such number of points in my test. If I do that, I'm successful. If not, I'm a failure. This is how I decide for myself. No, so that is something I can't control. All I can control is prepare for the test, appear for the test, write the test paper. What the outcome will be, I do not know. In India in particular, you know. Sometimes they used to say, this is a joke. These people are burdened with so many answer papers which they have to correct within a certain period of time. So every day he may have to correct maybe 100 answer papers, you know, to meet with his goal of correcting so many answer papers within a week or 15 days. He doesn't have that much time. Answer papers are very long and he has to read everything and then what? He doesn't have time. And very often he doesn't have a mood also. He may be, after waking, he is having a cup of tea and his wife made tea and then there is not enough sugar there or too much sugar and he just gets upset. And so then he starts examining those papers. So then, in what mood that fellow is examining the test paper, answer paper? If he is in good mood, then he may be favorable in you know, judging, scoring. Not in a good mood, he may not be favorable. I appear for an interview. Depends on the panel of people who are interviewing, in what mood they are, in what, you know, what is the state of their mind, all of that will play a role in whether I am selected or not. Thus, whenever I judge myself based on outcome, I am setting myself up, because outcome is something that I do not control. It is controlled by factors which are not in my control. A simple example is shooting an arrow from a bow. I have a target. I will hit the target. So it is quite in order that when I am shooting an arrow, that I have the expectation to hit the target. It's not that I just shoot arrow anyway, yes, I won't hit the target. And therefore, I train myself and I do what is all required to release the arrow in such a manner that it will hit the target. But there is no guarantee that it will. If there is a guarantee, nobody will ever lose in the Olympics, it is not so. There are shooting competitions, all kinds of competitions are there. If I could control, then nobody will lose, isn't it? But big champions also lose sometimes. The most favorite, you know, in the French Open, Wimbledon, whatever else, and right they lose in the semi-finals, the quarter-finals. Meaning that if I could determine or control what the outcome is, then nobody will lose. But we know that people lose. That means that in spite of the best effort, the outcome is not in their control. Now, as I said, I always have a habit of judging myself and evaluating myself. What should I judge myself on? If I judge myself as acceptable based on the outcome, if outcome is successful, then I'm acceptable. If outcome is not successful, I'm not acceptable. Then there can never be a certainty of whether I will find myself all right or not. And unfortunately, in this world, the failures are more than successes in everybody's life. And failure is what I declare failure, understand? That being the case, there are always going to be many more chances of my declaring myself a failure and disapproving of myself, disliking myself, feeling bad about myself, feeling sad. So one simple lesson is, if I have to judge, best is not to judge, but I have to judge myself, then one thing I can do is to judge myself based on my effort and not based on the outcome. Because once the arrow is released from the bow, then that arrow is no more in my control. As long as the arrow is on the bow, so long it is in my control. Once I release it, it's not in my control. And whether that arrow will hit the target or not is not determined by me, it is determined by the laws of physics, laws of nature. And those laws are not created by me. Those laws are not controlled by me. In fact, very often I do not even know all the laws involved. I may have a fair estimate of what the outcome would be, and accordingly I plan and I execute. But regardless of that, I can never have the total knowledge of all the variables involved in determining an outcome. It can be wind speed. It can be something which I, you know, at that time the wind starts blowing, and my calculations may not work. So that being the case, there are so many factors outside of my control which play a role in determining what the outcome will be, is unfair on my part, unfair to me on my part, to judge myself based on outcome which I do not control. I should be fair to myself. See, fairness is a value. First thing, I should be fair to myself. If I have to judge myself, I should judge myself based on the effort which is in my control. If I feel that, from the outcome then I can learn whether my effort was all right or not. Sometimes it's out. And I can always improve, I can always change. But if judging myself based on outcome is not in my control, in which case there are all the chances of my declaring myself a failure, feeling dissatisfied with myself, unhappy with myself, sad with myself. So this is lesson number one. And that is, do not judge yourself based on what you do not control. If you have to judge yourself based on what you control. Then Swamiji, what do I do with this failure? What do I do with the outcome which I don't control? What do we do? Well, accept gracefully whatever the outcome is. What is accepting gracefully? Accept gracefully means you welcome it or relate to it without any frustration, without any rejection, without any resistance. We resist those things which we do not like. We resist, we reject things that we do not like. First of all, I have decided what I like and what I do not like. And then I resist, I reject, I react to what I consider not likable by me. So Bhagavad Gita says that no, you do not judge anything. Don't judge the outcome. The laws, the universal wisdom judges what the outcome is. So who decides where the arrow falls? If I do not decide, who decides, Swamiji? The universal wisdom decides. The universal wisdom, the universal laws, they decide where the arrow will fall. And let me respect that judgment. Because I was hoping for a certain outcome based on my limited wisdom. Whereas the outcome is decided by universal wisdom. So I should respect universal wisdom and I should admit, okay, it was my limited wisdom. I let go of my demand that I should be right. I submit my limited wisdom to the universal wisdom, my limited ego to the universal wisdom, and accept the judgment of the universal wisdom. Without, what is acceptance? Without resistance, without rejection, without blaming. So this attitude of what is called graceful acceptance will enable me to remain free from unfairly judging myself. Graceful acceptance of what happens? Because what happens is not controlled by me, is controlled by the universal wisdom, by universal laws, which I have not created, which I do not even know in their entirety. And therefore, I gracefully accept. Now, Swamiji, how can you gracefully accept failure? Who says it is failure? Who declares it to be failure? Oh, but my arrow did not shoot the target. Is not a failure? Is not a failure. Why do you call it a failure? It's an event. So do not brand an outcome as a failure because I am branding it. Nobody has said that I should brand this or that. Therefore, I refrain from branding something as success and failure. Don't brand success and failure. Brand what happens as what is right. Arrow hit the target? Right. Thank you, universal wisdom. Did not hit the target? Thank you, universal wisdom. Well, how can you thank? Because then you learn. When things do not go according to expectation, if I have this attitude of not reacting, of not rejecting, then I'll be able to maintain what we call an objective frame of mind, a non-reacting frame of mind. And if that is so, I will be able to learn from that event as to whether I need to change, whether I need to do things differently. A reacting person is not a learning person. A non-reacting person is a person who can learn. And a person who learns is a person who grows. So our life should become a process of learning and growing. But that can happen provided I am a non-reacting person. That can happen when I gracefully accept. I do not demand that things have to necessarily conform to my expectations. On the other hand, I change my expectation to conform to what happens. This attitude brings about a slow transformation in me. Because when I hold on to my expectations, then there are reactions. On the other hand, I let go of my expectations in the face of what the reality is. In that case, I become released from that burden of expectation and judging myself. Thus, Bhagavad Gita says, do not judge an event as success or failure. It is an event. It is what is right because it is so determined by universal wisdom, so it is right. Never gracefully, objectively accept it. Don't judge that. If I don't judge that, I don't judge this. Understand it. Even a failure is not our problem. You know what is our problem? Our problem is, I am a failure. That is our problem. If I do not succeed, I say, okay, that my effort failed. That's okay. But you know what we say? I failed. See the difference between the two. The effort failed is one thing. I failed is another thing. Effort failed is no problem. It's a reality. I failed is not a reality. Therefore, do not judge yourself based on that. Don't declare yourself failure or success. Both success and failure are both objective realities. I do not superimpose them upon myself. And then in both the situations, I can remain objective, non-reacting, meaning accepting. When I accept that, I accept myself also. And thus, I remain free from sadness. Well, that's all it is, Swami. I am not sad. Then what? If you are not sad, you are happy. We need not, fortunately, we need not do anything separately to become happy. All we need is not create this sadness for ourselves. If you don't do that, we are happy. How can you say that, Swami? Because happiness happens to be our nature. It is this sadness which I have created that deprives me of that happiness. And thus, when I do not create sadness by the self-judgment, self-impositions, then what remains is happiness. This is a wonderful thing. Vedanta says, you don't need to do anything to be happy. You do something to be unhappy. When we are unhappy, we should know that we have done something. Which we do not do, then we are happy. Happiness is our nature. Therefore, all we need to do is not reject ourselves, not condemn ourselves. Then there is self-acceptance. When there is self-acceptance, there is happiness. There is no sadness. So one lesson tonight is, what is one simple rule or attitude of remaining free from sadness is called graceful acceptance of what is. What I cannot control. Every minute I confront the world which I don't control. What should be my attitude? Of graceful acceptance. It is in order. What is graceful acceptance? It is in order. I don't reject it. I don't resist it. I don't blame it. I remind myself, it is right. What is right. In order. Because what is the creation of universal wisdom. Therefore, it should be in order. But Swamiji, sometimes people are unfair to me, my boss is unfair to me, this is unfair to me. Here comes another, what we call trust or faith. What is the faith? The faith is, there is basically fairness in the universe. So whatever universal wisdom does is always fair. I don't accept, Swami. Well, how do you judge something unfair? Based on your limited wisdom. So we say that whatever is a creation of universal wisdom. Every moment, whatever presents itself before us is the creation of universal wisdom. If you want to call it God, you may. And it faith that this universal wisdom, that there is basic fairness, there is no reason why it should be unfair. There is no reason why Creator should be unfair to me or to anybody. But I don't see, Swami, it is unfair. This is what you think right now, under this mental condition, you judge something as unfair. But sometimes we do not know what effect the present event will have after 10 years. We don't know. What I think is wrong or unfavorable or a failure at this moment under this state of my mind, I do not know what effect it will have later in future. I don't know. Sometimes when we look back at our life, we find that what at that time we consider wrong or a failure, I sometimes tell myself, thank God I did not get admission in that place, thank God. That time I was disappointed. Thank God I was not accepted here, you know. So I had to do only this. I find out that ultimately what I find is, whatever I have done, I find myself situation in life, they are right for me. Meaning I am no good for anything else. I am designed only for a few things. And I find myself in those circumstances. And so, when we look back, then we find there is reason for accepting this fact that there is a basic fairness. There is what we call fairness, there is grace, that's there in our life. With that faith, we can even accept, we can even swallow a very bitter pill. It may be bitter right now, some bitter pills sometimes are required for curing disease. So sometimes we get bitter pills in our life. Why does the universal wisdom give bitter pills? Maybe I need, because there is some disease which needs to be cured. When we grew up, we always grew up in those days, we used to go to Ayurvedic physicians, you know, for our treatment of little things, you know, some fever and cough and cold and stuff like that. Go to Ayurvedic physicians. If some of you are familiar with Ayurvedic medicine, it is always bitter. Now, time comes, 9 o'clock in the morning, I need to take this medicine. I know it is bitter, I don't want it. But my mother, it is her duty, her job to make sure that I take that medicine. So she catches hold of me. If I do not cooperate with her, she puts me in her lap. With one hand she presses me. If I don't open my mouth, she presses my nose. Mouth is open. And that spoon of bitter medicine is thrust in my mouth. In India, we were very obedient. Here the child will say, "Mom, I hate you." Though we didn't say that. Sometimes looks like she is very cruel. She is cruel only to be kind. Similarly also sometimes it looks like what is happening is very cruel. But it may be like bitter medicine. It may have something in it for me to learn, for me to grow. This is a general attitude that pain comes in my life to grow. Pleasure comes in my life to encourage me so that I don't, you know, become totally disappointed. So now and then they give me a little pleasure, a little bit. But pain generally comes to grow. This is a general attitude. In which case, I will not become disappointed, will not become frustrated. Disappointment and frustration is, even though I express outside, is always about myself. I will not be disappointed with myself, frustrated with myself. When there is self-acceptance, there is happiness. There is no sadness. So self-acceptance happens when we have that attitude of mind, which is graceful acceptance of what is. That creates an attitude of mind in which self-acceptance happens. We cannot will, it has to happen. But we create condition when it can happen. That condition is a condition of mind created by the attitude of graceful acceptance with faith that what is in order, what is fair, what is right for me. Even though it may not so appear right now, but in all faith I accept it. So this is an important lesson as far as freedom from sadness is concerned. What is the reason for sadness? Self non-acceptance. What is the solution? Self-acceptance. We can perform meditation of self-acceptance. It may be difficult sometimes to do in the heat of the things, but when one is, you know, I'm by myself, I have some leisure time, not under pressure to do things, at that time I sit down and remind myself, I tell myself, your mind, accept yourself. Love yourself as you are. Love this body as it is. Love the mind as it is. Love the intellect as it is. Love your achievements as they are. Love your failures also as they are. Accept and love yourself as you are. If you decide to do that, we'll find it's just, I'm all right. So we can perform this meditation on self-acceptance. It's an attitude we want to maintain constantly. But we can practice it when we are by ourselves, which is what we call meditation, deliberately accepting that my body is all right, mind is all right, my career is all right, but it's all right. I'm all right. So self-acceptance is the solution to the problem of sadness. Other creatures don't have problems, they accept themselves. A cow has no problem, a dog has no problem of self-acceptance. They always accept themselves. They are comfortable with what they are. When the human being is not comfortable with what he is or she is, therefore there are ambitions, I want to be different, I want to change. That shows I am not comfortable with what I am. A dog has no motivation to change, it just lives its life. You don't want to become a dog or a cat, but the point is, the reason why there is no sadness in them is because they are comfortable with what they are. We are not comfortable with what we are. We discover that comfort with ourselves is a solution for our problem of sadness. Okay, I conclude here. We have a few minutes to go. If you have any questions. Today we don't have a microphone. Okay, all right, never mind. Yes, sir.
How can we be progress if there is no desire? You accept everything as is. Can there be progress?
Yeah, this is the usual question. That if this attitude of accepting what is, where is the motivation to progress? Where is the motivation to change? My first question is, what is the purpose of progress? Why do you want progress? So that you can be happy, isn't it? But if by acceptance you are happy, if you are happy with what is, what's the need to change it? The need to change comes when you are not happy with what is. But if happy with what is, what's the need to change? That's one thing. Second thing is, progress doesn't have to be always for ourselves. Progress can be for others. If I'm happy with the way things are, I find that others are not happy, what can I do for them? So that will be a very healthy motive for progress. Yes. So between this time period of age 30 to 60, looks like the time compresses, meaning there is no time. I think that could be the time where you are chasing your ambitions and therefore there is no leisure at all. But otherwise, all you need is a certain leisure time, maybe some minutes in a day set aside for this, when we can take stock of the situation. It's a matter of priority. If we have a value for taking stock of situation, If a value of understanding ourselves, where we are coming from, what is it that we need? Through all these activities, what is it that I want to, what I am seeking, what do I want to achieve? Since we have concluded that what I want to achieve is in terms of something out there, in terms of my career, in terms of my income, in terms of my position, whatever. So we are chasing those things. If I understand that what really I am seeking to achieve is satisfaction with myself, if that understanding is there, then perhaps we will be able to make time for understanding what brings about that acceptance. It's mainly our conclusions which drive us to do what we do. But when that conclusion changes, if you are exposed to this teaching, for example, then we will not be blindly running or chasing things. We'll be also looking at ourselves, our attitudes, our motivations, why the attitudes are what they are, what they should be, etc. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Partially.
Yes, sir.
In the beginning you talked about the need, using distraction to not be with self. And I find sometimes I can watch the news and get upset, you know, and I'll walk around and be upset about something that's on the news. And I can understand that that's me not accepting an external circumstance. But is the appropriate action to know that when I watch the news, I get upset and I should not watch the news anymore? Or should I work on myself and just try to accept that what I'm watching, when I'm watching the news, these are out external things that I cannot control?
Right. So watching the news, I get upset because, again, I have an expectation of what should be. If I let go of my expectation and accept that it is something I don't control, that's what it is. And in that case, you will have also the leisure of deciding, can I do something about it? What can I do about something that happens in Iraq, for example, or Afghanistan or XYZ? So will you remain frustrated? Well, you can pray. If you so feel that something should be done, then you can do what is within your control. But basically, accepting this is a reality. There must be reason. There must be reason behind what is happening. We may not know the reason, or we feel it's not acceptable to us, it should not be like this. But the fact that it's happening must have some reason. And again, what the reason is, is determined by the universal wisdom. So I accept it. Accept doesn't mean that I condone it, understand, you know. Accept, I do not react to it. That's all called acceptance. Not condoning. Not agreeing. You see? Accept means not reacting to it. Okay, this is what it is. That I do not reject it. I do not dismiss it. I do not deny it. I accept. Understand. And then decide my attitude, whether I want to do something about it. I'll just keep quiet, whatever. Yes?
I have the same question as I wanted to ask it. Essentially, there are so many things that we feel silent from outside influences, right? Not just from ourselves, which you touched upon a lot. But there are a lot of things that sadly meat, for example, lots of animals, for example, dogs, maybe say swathra families is going on. Our resources are depleting every second and we are exploiting it to the full. So there are many things like that, right? So as you said, poverty, so many things are there. So but these are really happening. I mean, we can tend to accept it, but the fact that someone is suffering is causing suffering, right, to ourselves. Is there some way to, obviously we would like to change things. We can't control the world, that is unacceptable. I mean, that I have accepted that we only take small steps. But for every one step you make in the forward direction, there are probably 10 steps going on the reverse side.
If your pain is because of pain of somebody else, it is acceptable. If your pain is because of yourself, your ego, your expectations, your demands, then that is what is the problem. If your pain is because of your sensitivity, and your pain because of somebody else's pain, that is quite okay. That is not saddening. It is pain. Sadness or depression is a different thing. Pain is one thing, sadness is a different thing. You are pained at somebody else's suffering. That shows your sensitivity. And that perhaps will motivate you to do something. If nothing else, pray. That will not cause sadness or depression. Pain is that is generated in me because I do not accept something. It's not in keeping with my demands, my expectations. That is when it becomes a problem. You follow, pain is one thing, sadness is a different thing. Right. So, when you say attachment creates sadness, it is a sense of personal loss that creates the sadness. Not something that happens out there to somebody. But what that means to me, that when I feel there is a personal loss to me, that is what causes sadness to me. That something happened there to somebody is one thing. What it means to me when I judge that means there is a loss to me, it is that loss which causes that pain. And when I feel that also is okay. Even that pain also is okay. That pain need not make me depressed. But when there is resistance to that, why I somehow hold myself responsible. Sometimes what we do is we hold ourselves responsible for something that happens somewhere else. And we start judging ourselves. So that depression or sadness comes from self-judgment. Not even from pain that comes as a result of some loss. Pain is okay, and that we have to go through. Yes, it is true that there is an attachment. It is that attachment is dependence. That ours dependent upon a certain person, let us say, for my comfort and happiness. The departure of that person now leaves me, deprived of that comfort and happiness. And that's why I feel lost. That's why I feel unhappy. So, love is one thing, and when we become dependent upon that object of love for our happiness and comfort, then it's likely to cause that kind of unhappiness, sadness. It's going to happen. But is it possible for us to love and not become attached? To love and accept things as they are? That if we find satisfaction from love, from what I am able to do, without the consideration of what I am able to receive, If my happiness comes from what I receive, then when I stop receiving that, naturally there is a loss. My happiness comes from what I do, then it will be much less. But we get used to, we get used to receiving and then becoming dependent upon that. And then when it is taken away from us, there is a vacuum, there is a sense of loss. Then we have to process that, we have to go through that. As long as we understand that this is the reason, so long it will work out. I realize I'm unhappy because I feel a sense of loss. Why? Because I inadvertently became dependent upon that source for my comfort and happiness. And that's why this has happened. Okay. So even understanding the cause of why I'm feeling what I'm feeling also is very, it also goes a long way. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.